Welcome here, guys. Thank you so much for coming. It's an honor to teach this class on reading, on literature, and how to teach reading. So I have some goats at home, a number of goats and sheep and bees, but goats are what we're kind of focusing on here. I bought them this spring as an effort to be a farmer and a shepherd. And so I bought them from this little farm in Virginia, and I brought them home, and these goats had some really bad habits. They're all fat as could be. Their hooves are all like they're big and overgrown and had issues, but unhealthy, really unhealthy. And they had been living in a barn and eating feed for the last 9 months. Turns out goats love feed, love it. And they get fat, but it's not very good for them, especially like cheap bags from, you know, Tractor Supply or something. And they get fat, they get unhealthy, their nails grow, or their hooves grow long, they have all kinds of issues. And when I brought them into my pasture, I use the term loosely. It's like this rocky, barren, it's a place for goats. Tough goats, hardy goats, survivalist type goats. And I put them in this pasture, and they looked up at me in their little goaty voices. They just told me again and again that this is not the deal they made. They eat feed. We're the feed kind of goats. We eat feed. Briars and pine trees, and this is a nice. Anyway, so it was not looking good for my goats until I found this beautiful Billy. I mean, huge. He's a Kiko, 100% Kiko. His horns are just big spiraling. Brought him out there, and he knew what to do with pine trees and briars, and they started eating. And all my goats are out there eating, and they're doing great. They went skinny, and now they're fat again, right? And they're fat in a healthy way. Their coats are shiny. Their feet are beautiful. I trimmed them when I got them, but they didn't grow crooked. They didn't grow bad. They didn't overgrow. They're eating what they're supposed to. And it was interesting when I put them in there, when they started eating the things they started eating. They ate the poison ivy first. I guess it tastes good. I haven't screwed up my courage yet to do a test. And then they ate the pine trees. And then they ate the briars. And they're thriving on that stuff. They're thriving. And I think our children can be like that. Right, so we tend to drink, you know, right in front of everybody without a lot of respect, an iced coffee, you know, a milkshake. Well, people do, or we tend toward junk food, right? And our children in the world of reading, right? They skip the classics like Dr. Seuss, and they. I like Dr. I actually really like Dr. Seuss, but they often skip the great ones and they read garbage. And there's a lot of garbage in this world, really garbagey things. And sometimes when we get them, and we're teaching this kind of thinking of older grades here, sometimes they come with bad habits, right? And they need to, it makes them unhealthy. They're a little puffy and they're a little soft. But it doesn't take very much to inspire them to take a different route, right? If you're the old 100% Kiko Billy, to show them a better thing to eat, a better way to live, better kinds of things to eat. And one of the greatest opportunities you have as a teacher is reading class or literature. To be able to read and understand great literature is often one of the most useful tools you can give your students. But it's interesting, a lot of upper grade teachers that I've sat in their classes and I've talked with them about teaching literature, it seems like literature is often, or reading is often, assigned instead of taught. And now sometimes you can assign the reading, I think that works eventually, but teach them how to read and how to process these stories before you can do that very effectively. Our students need to be taught how. And so I've spent the last about 12 years of my teaching students who don't speak English as their first language. It's the second or the third language, or the fourth or fifth. I can't believe some of my students. And because of that, I've learned a lot of things about teaching reading and teaching literature. And here's a little interesting tip. If you have five teachers, ESL teachers, teaching the same material, the same way, the same lessons, you helped them, you prepared the same program, the teacher who talks the most slowly will have by far and away the most effective class. Like, I'm gonna say five times more effective, five times more comprehension. You can speed up a few percent and lose them. Like, it's amazing how much you lose them. I went to school with a girl who spoke English as a second language, and I remember when we got to these literature books, she floundered badly. One of the things you find in really great literature is the use of irony and kind of tongue-in-cheek kind of things, and she missed all of that completely. She was doing great to get the literal facts out of the story, like the bold and the unwritten things, and it was a complete miss. And to her, these books were a nightmare. They were a real nightmare. But I've taught these stories, some of them, to many different students. Even if it is their even if English is their second language, you can show them how to take apart those stories and process them. I don't know if I'm Canadian or not, into a way that they can understand them and enjoy them and be benefited by them. Show them how to take the process one bite at a time. It's a little bit like so we eat with spoons and forks, right? Generally, I mean, that's what our moms try to tell us how to do. And I don't know why, when you have a perfectly good hand, you should be using your fork. But when I went to Bangladesh, they eat only with their hand, their right hand. And I remember when I was eating the first meal I was ever served there, it was this rice with soupy curry. And I'm just, how do I, from here to here, like, and I gather up a handful and it's dripping and I, you know, and it misses and it's just this curry nightmare. And they're like, no, Aaron, no, that's not how you use your thumb, right? You make a little ball, you cup the bite here on your fingers, kind of this little mash ball, and then you just flip it in your mouth with your thumb. So simple. Such a simple little change, and it enabled me to gain 25 pounds. Just use your thumb. And there it went, right? And it's techniques like that we're trying to give our children here with something like literature that is often inaccessible to them, and we try to give them the tools. So, what are some tools? So, your biggest tool in your toolbox for teaching literature, if you could combine your saw, your impact, your hammer, and possibly your tool belt all together into one tool and have that in your bag, it would be this tool. Show them, help them, teach them, drill into them how to read. How to read out loud. And you do that out loud in your class. And it starts with slowly. And clearly, not dragging, but slowly stop at each word. So students tend to have this feeling that if they're not reading about four words ahead and stumbling along, that everybody else will think they're these slow learners who can't read very well. And so they're just running through this stuff as hard as they can. No, stop and slow down. You model that, right? You show them how, because you as a teacher, there's a real possibility that you have bad habits in reading as well. Like, there is that possibility. When I started teaching the first year out in Oregon, story time came along, and I was supposed to be reading to my students, and I couldn't believe how difficult it was. I mean, I read all the time. I have libraries of books. I have maybe, I don't know, 8,000, 9,000 books in my house, and but I'm in front of my students, and it's kind of stuttering, and I had to learn to read aloud again, slowly. And that's good. You probably have picked up some bad habits reading silently over the years. And now you're going, I mean, you probably your experienced teachers and you've already made all these adjustments. But you're going to have to train yourself out of that to show them how to read. I think this reading process, showing them how to read, is something that probably starts in your own mind. You have to realize how important it is, number one. This is that little story time you have right after recess, and you're sweaty from the soccer game. That might just be the most important part of your day. That's an opportunity, especially if you think teaching literature is important, that's where you teach them how to do literature. Very much. I had a teacher that recognized the importance of the story time, and he was an amazing teacher. He's our bishop now, but a really nice guy too. But he came up with these strange little short stories he would round up from who knows where, and he would come in and it was a big deal. We sat up straight. He sat up straight. We could draw, we could do things on our desk as long as it was quiet, as long as we were listening to the story. Well, halfway through the story, we all just kind of petered out for whatever we were doing and forgot to close our mouths, and we're just listening. Oh, and he would read distinctly and with great expression. And I remember so many of the stories he read us, like, and one of them, I don't know where the story is, you probably even know about it. There's this farm in Brazil that there's a man and he's trying to defend his farm from this ocean of killer ants that are creeping across the jungle, and he knows they're coming and they're getting close, and a deer gets out there, some animals take him down, just bones in a few minutes, right? And he's there trying to defend his farm, and he's filling the irrigation ditch up with pet gas and lighting it. You probably read this, like story after story, that we loved it. We love those stories. And he read them in a way that you didn't miss a detail, right? Not a word. We got it all, right? And then when literature came around, the stories, how many of you teach these in your school? Many of you do. I was just talking to my brother-in-law, who's a teacher extraordinaire. He's amazing. And he said he thinks these books are his favorite books of all time, next to the Bible. There, you know what? I don't wax eloquent about a curriculum very much. These are good. If you don't teach them in your school, that's fine. Whatever reading you use that. But go with your very own shillings and buy these books and read them to your students, story at a time, right? They're good. They're life-changing stories. They really are. They're CLE, they're amazing. And we did these books in school. I loved them, loved the stories. And if you teach your children how to read them correctly, you're 90% of the way there. I also like to teach my children how to speak in public, and it's terrifying to a person who doesn't speak English well to think of getting up in front of class and presenting in English something that they... So I teach them a bunch of little tricks. And they don't matter that much, I don't think. But it's kind of it gets their mind in the right mode, everything in the right mode. And I tell them always, when you start in your seat, before you get up to come up to the front, you sit there, you breathe, you keep your shoulders back, you keep loose, you keep ready. And when you get up, you stand up. And you walk to the front of the classroom. You work on the speed and all that. You get up to the front. And I always tell them to do like this. So you get to the front and you come up to the lectern, because now they're scared, right? Give them something a little concrete to do, because maybe it's a big crowd, right? Grab the lectern with your left hand as you walk up, if you're walking from this side. Come with your right hand, square yourself up to the lectern before you look up, right? This is something concrete for them to do. Then when they get up, look all around the room, look at all the people, and smile. And usually it's some kind of a death's head grin up there. But, you know, they're following the protocol, and then they know how to... And in reading in your class, give them some tips like that. Posture in your desk, sit up. And when it's your turn to follow along, obviously follow along to the best of your ability. And when it gets to your turn to read, don't try to have your book high enough. They're not, your chin is not on your chest. And then just start in the beginning and read through it, right? Clearly say the words, get to the end of each word, make sure you say it, and then go on to the, you know, and it's something you practice. It's not something you can just explain and they understand it. And that really helps because it's a little vulnerable to read in front of people. Now, they should have been doing it right along, all the way up here. And if you're schooled, if that's the way they come to you, great. But many times they don't come, you know, ready to go with that. And maybe even if you are in the upper grades, you're going to have to teach them how to read out loud. One of the ways of doing that is to have them take story time sometimes and assign that ahead of time. Say, hey, you know, you're going to be reading, you know, this chapter. Or if you, I like doing short stories for story. And sometimes I read through books. I mean, this is an important part of your day. Get the stories right. Assign them a story from whatever, a book, and assign it on Monday or whenever you're going to do it, and say, you know, on Friday, you're going to be reading to the class. And so they go, they can practice, and they can get ready, and then they read it, and it's kind of a big deal, and everybody pays attention, and it's kind of fun, and all this and that, and you can maybe have a, you know, a rotation or something. But you're trying to prepare them, to give them good reading habits, because you can't always read out all these stories out loud. I mean, you have a lot of, you're teaching a lot of children. You don't have time to read every story with them, but you're trying to give them a foundation of habit to be able to know to do know how to approach the story. Because it's amazing how many students will not even read the story before they start on their questions. You know, they have horrible habits. I mean, here they are, halfway through their lesson, you know, 30% guess. And Mr. Aaron, what about, how could you have read the story and not know that? Well, they didn't read it, right? They just started. So we're trying to build a habit, how to approach the story. Get your mind at rest. Here's the story. And we're going to actually do that in here and read. And it'll be great fun. But do the first few, I recommend, if you can, do the first few lessons of your literature in class with your students, if you can. Because it just sets the tone for it. And yeah, you're going to have your undisciplined people. Do you have a paper? Okay. You have your undisciplined people, you know, not doing it. And it's also, so I spend a lot of time teaching people who are a little younger than this, about fifth or sixth grade, and you know, their minds are wandering. I have this little deal with my students. I just, when we're all reading as a class or whatever, and there's usually quite a few of them, and I just kind of have this as your teacher, you have this kind of way of catching the people who are not paying attention. And so we're here looking along, and I'm like, Samantha, never even looking up from my thing, and she has to take the next paragraph, right? You don't want it to be this rigid, you know, desperate, worried thing that the teacher's, you know, sentence after sentence, and your struggling reader, the dyslexic guy, he's under so much pressure, he can't even see the story. You don't want to do that. But if you have your, so don't pick on those, right? They can't, there's not a chance they can follow all through this. They're counting 15 paragraphs ahead, putting their finger on there. Yeah, the lazy ones do that too. You're going to have to just figure this out. Let them do that. The lazy ones, you're going to want to, they can follow along. And then take the bunny trails as they come. I like that. Something about literature class, when you're talking about a story that's got power and depth, and it's another place, another time, and you start discussing things with your students, questions, hard questions happen. And that's a really good place to, it's a really good gift to give your advanced students, those questions. Like your smart student, the guy, the thinker and the dreamer, and he's over there, or she, and there, and they have some extra time, and your class comes up with a question. That's a good question. And you know, I don't know, yeah, again, you have to figure this out. You don't just assign the question. Okay, Frank, now you do the story, or you answer this question. You're like, I wonder what the answer is to that. You know, it'd be really interesting if any of you would find that out. Even if you know the answer, you're not the answer key. This open-ended question, if any of you find out, it'd be really interesting to know. You could maybe present it to the class tomorrow. And sometimes the ball gets rolling in such a way that the next morning there'll be 10 of them. Hey, you know what? We know why that happened. Okay, well, here, let's present. And so that's good, because really, in these books, the stories have depth, a lot of depth, and they're often part of long stories. And the context is interesting, and it's a way for pretty well any mind to be deeply, deeply challenged. Well, I don't know, we should start here and continue. We should try to do this story. And I would like to read it together, and I would like to just read it by paragraphs and focus on reading. And here's the deal. I knew a dyslexic teacher who had a terrible time reading. Terrible time reading. And he's never going to be a good, smooth reader. But he went into his class, and he's the teacher. He's going to read them the story. He's going to do his best. And he struggled in front of his class. And he said, you know, I'm not a good reader. It's just not. I try. I'm not a good reader. But I'm going to try to be the best that I can. I'm going to work at it. I'm going to try. And the students get to watch him struggle and watch him improve and in a way that was unbelievable. Like, they're going to struggle with their own Waterloo, whatever that is. And they watch their teacher up there in front, Mr. Teacher, vulnerable as can be, stuttering through his words, right? And that was powerful. If you have I had a teacher who was a terrible speller. And he's on the board and he's spelling. I'm actually a horrible speller too, but I almost got that test right yesterday, which I just can't believe. I was one off. It was amazing. Putting that in my photo album. And but he would spell things wrong on the board, and his students would tell him, you know, that's it. But they would tell him really nicely. You know, that's not right. Oh, it isn't. How do you spell it? And they would tell him, and that vulnerability and him being kind of open with his weakness and vulnerability was powerful in the classroom. Here I am. I'm struggling too. I'm not Mr. Perfect. And your reading can be like that. You know, you struggle a little with your reading or whatever. That's fine. That's actually an opportunity. It's an opportunity for you to struggle in front of your students, and they'll love you for it and respect you for it. And when you try, it's powerful. Anyway, hopefully we won't have too many bunny trails here. But so Mama and the Garfield Boys, I think that's the first story in the Perspectives of Life, I think, here. And a short story, and I picked it for a number of reasons. It's a story that I enjoy. It's funny, I remember all these stories from school. You probably had 80, I'll still remember them, even if I wouldn't have revisited them. And so this is a story, and it's kind of neat. It's about a teacher and a little boy and all kinds of things. And written by a grizzard. I mean, that's kind of interesting. It'd be a heavy, heavy cross to bear to be named Grizzard. But Grizzard is a good writer. Now, in these literature books, there's a little paragraph in the front of each, at the front of each lesson. And that little paragraph is worth pausing on every single one of those stories. I read them, and I try to write things like this for other things that I'm trying to write. These are little masterpieces, generally. This one says, if every person is a diamond in the rough, no, is every person a diamond in the rough? Can everyone become a shining gem if polished enough? Some people appear hopeless. It seems no amount of chiseling and polishing can perfect their ugly, sharp edges. They apparently are solid chunks of meanness. I think I know people like that. When I look in the mirror, no, hopefully not. But the love of Christ, patiently and repeatedly applied, can coax a luster from the most hopeless, unlovely person. This was the unforgettable lesson that Mama taught her son. And I like Mama in this story. And I like that she's called Mama. That's what they're supposed to be called, Mama. Anyway, so then we have some words down here. So what do you, maybe we'll just start here with you, Joshua, and just read the first word. These are the words we're going to encounter in our story, in the box. And these are words that are similar, or one of them is a synonym. Let's choose which one best defines. So give the first one a shot. And this is, you know what, if it's wrong, no problem. We're gonna figure it out.
Suspended. Temporarily denied a privilege.
Okay. Does that sound right to you all? I think we're on target there. There's other meanings of suspended too, right? But in the story, this one, that's exactly how it's used. That's good. All right, number two. Okay, security measure. Is this right? What do you think? No, not quite. Again, I know why you said that, right? This is a security measure. You put some in a headlock. That works, man. So, but in the story, how it's used. Anybody else have an idea for that?
I guess a
wrestling hold. Now, what's interesting? A security measure and a wrestling hold. When you're talking about a headlock. Are actually very similar. So here's a little thing to remember. In CLE, when you have a question, you have these literature books are full of multiple choice questions, right? And they have, generally when you get to a multiple choice question, so there's one that's far off, obviously wrong, right? Generally. And then there's one that's perfectly right, right? Generally. Now, you can have some arguments on this, and that's okay. You're allowed to do that. And then there's one that's kind of wrong, fairly decently wrong, but there's going to be one that's very close. Generally, there's one that maybe the first time you read over, if you're the guessing type, you're going to get to and be like, oh, that one. Read them carefully and think of it, because there's going to be one in there that's going to try to trick you, right? And that's a little bit what they did with the word here, right? Yeah, it could work. If a wrestling hold wasn't one of the options, a security measure would work. So keep that in mind. And it's perfectly okay to get the wrong one. You're going to get a lot of wrong in this book, probably. Until you learn how to really read these stories, you're going to be stretched with these lessons. Number three.
Groveling,
acting in a low plea. Okay, do we like that? Groveling, heckling, and acting in a low pleading manner. Yep, I think he's dead on target there. Good job. Good pronunciation too, all of you. Number four.
Pummel. To beat.
To beat. Good enough. I like it. Number five.
Profound. Impressive.
Okay. Good enough. I think. Yep. I don't have an answer key for any of this, so we're just... Yeah, that's right. Number six. Okay, what do we think? I think it's the best. Excellent. All right, turn the page. Well, let's just start reading. Let's keep right on going. Lyndon, just read by paragraphs and take your time. And I don't know that I'm going to really critique you. Do your thing. Do the best that you can. This is not about perfection. But when we hear each other read, we'll be like, oh, I want to read like that guy. Somebody I just heard reading out here with this deep voice. I think it was, Yoder, Nathan. He just read something, I forget. And he's such a great way of reading. I'm like, when I get big, I'm going to be like Nathan. With a deep voice, too. Like, by the way, you'll recognize me in heaven by the how low I can sing. You over there, the bass section? Oh, that'll be me. No, I'm tenor. No, that's I'm gonna be in the bass anyway. So that's a bunny trail. But go ahead, let's read.
Mama in the car. What I recall most vividly about my first day at the school in Warren, Georgia, where my mama taught, was that as my teacher, Mrs. Bowers, welcomed us to the second grade. The Garfield brothers set off a small bomb on the left.
Okay, so hold on just a second. That was a sentence, right? That was one sentence, and not easy to read, right? The way my brain is wired, I don't think I could have done as well as you did reading that sentence. That's okay. And you're allowed to do that. I mean, you're allowed to do, this is the thing, and your students are following along, and I thought you did a very good job. This isn't necessarily the easiest story in the world that you'll ever read. Neither is the King James Version when you're reading your devotions either. But so we have these, we have difficult things to read sometimes. Go ahead.
The bomb blew out several windows and sent Mrs. Bauer screaming to the principal's office. Mr. Killingsworth suspended the Garfields for a week, which was what they wanted when they set off the bomb. Frankie Garfield was 10 and David 9, and both had failed first grade several times.
So, this is full of information, right? And when Mr. Skimmer is starting on his lesson, he read the bomb part. He might have got to Mr. Killingsworth, I'm not sure. What a great name for a school principal. You had a school principal named Mr. Killingsworth. Yes, sir. Whatever you say, sir. That's what we would do, wouldn't we? But he doesn't get to Frankie Garfield being 10 and David 9, both having failed. That's quite a sentence, right? Now we see. There's,
I can't quite tell. Is Mrs. Bauer's mom?
What's that?
Is Mrs. Bauer's mom?
Okay, is she? That's a great question. Is Mr. Bauer's mama?
No, she's not.
As my teacher, Mrs. where my mama taught. You know what? Let's figure that out. I don't know. I don't remember that. I kind of don't think she is. That's what my gut says from what I remember, but. This is worth checking. Good. Okay. Let's keep going.
What our former student did about my first day at the school of Florida, Georgia, as Mrs. Bowers woken up to second grade, the Barker brothers said, "Oh, it's my mom."
Okay. Okay, so let's think about that. Let's just pause on that a little bit. So he's welcoming them to second grade. She is. Are the Garfields still in first grade? Am I right on that? I guess it doesn't have to be in that grade. Small bomb on the window ledge. I don't know. You know what? All things will be made clear. If we need to know this, it will be told more about it. That's a good question. Good nose to the facts there. Okay.
Having your mother as a member of your school's faculty had its advantages. I could go by her room on my way home and ask for a few coins to spend on treats at Curetown and Cole's store. My friends and I would sit outside and eat our candy and hope we could finish before the Garfield boys showed up and took it away.
Okay, great. Now, I have a question. You didn't mispronounce anything. I'm not. But what do you do when your student mispronounces something? What's a good way of addressing that? Do you say, Lyndon? It's not vividly. So there's probably a better way. This is what I do with ESL because your students always mispronounce everything. So when they say something wrong, I never correct them because I want them to try. But this is what I do. Within a sentence or two, when they say a sentence, I repeat it back to them always, correct or incorrect. And it gives me an opportunity to correct whatever was wrong in there as I repeat it back to them. If your students say something wrong in the paragraph, you should probably point it out, right? We're trying to teach them. And how do you do that gently? Find a way to repeat it. I think Diana said yesterday that the students that are mispronouncing long words often are the ones who've only read them and haven't heard them. And that's very true in my experience. I remember one of the first times I was giving a talk somewhere and I said rendezvous. I literally said that in front of the class. And they laughed at me. But I'd never heard it, right? And so let's go on a rendezvous there at that point. Whatever. Anyway, but help your student. They don't want to mispronounce it. The others probably heard it too. So find a way to correct them that's not kind of demeaning to them. Repeat it. Sometimes I often have this kind of running commentary as we read. hopefully not this much at every lesson, but then there's ways to kind of point back, pronounce it right, and keep going. Anyway, figure that out. Keep going.
I managed to say to stay unmarked by the Garfield brothers, other than a few punches to my arms, and the day Frankie got me in a headlock and ran my head into a pole. But Frankie had just been teasing around. When he was serious about hurting someone, he didn't let him go until he was bleeding and groveling for mercy.
Keep going if you want. Do you want to read the next one? You want to get your mind and body in the right mode? Sorry about that.
In fifth grade, I finally got mine. I was biking my way to Cureton and Coles. At the end of the narrow path was a deep ditch that forced a hard left turn. The problem arose when Frankie Garfield ran up behind me. Get that bike out of the way. I'm in a hurry, Frankie demanded.
The moment I slowed to make the turn, Frankie lifted the back of my bike and flipped it. To be his stride, he was it.
I landed head first, and my bike landed on top of me. After seeing my nose bloody, my face scratched a giant knot on my forehead, Frankie figured the job was done and proceeded to the store to detach children from their candy bars.
I rode my bike home as fast as I could. I looked like I'd been in an accident and finished fourth. I tried to wash away as much mud and blood as I could and even tried to press the knot on my head flat. That didn't work.
My fear was this. Mama would see me in this condition and force the truth out of me that I had fallen victim to a Garfield. She would tell the principal, who would suspend Frankie. That would delight him, but he would also be angry that I had tattled on him. He would pummel me. On top of that, he would probably tell his brother, David, who would also take his turn at bruising my person.
I avoided Mama until dinner time. What happened to your face? She asked. How did you get that knot on your head?
Well, that's a good accident, that's it. I was riding down the path and fell off the stage.
It was one of those Garfields, wasn't it? Mom said. How did she always know those things? Still, I stuck to my story.
Did one of those boys hit you? She asked.
No, ma'am, I said. Well, he didn't hit me.
We've been on that path hundreds of times. I'm telling you, what do you want?
I told you. I'll see Frankie Garfield in the principal's office in the morning, she said. I'm tired of those boys bullying you children around.
Just as I thought.
Mama, I started, please don't tell Mr. Killingsworth. He'll call Frank again and the prank will beat me up again. This time worse.
She looked thoughtful. Okay. But I'm going to have a talk with Frankie myself.
When school was over, I took another route home and hid under my bed. 45 minutes later, I heard Mama come in the house and call me. I'm under the bed, Mama, I said.
Well, come out from under there, she said. Frankie Garfield isn't going to hurt.
Mama had called the sheriff. That's what had to have happened. Frankie and his brother had been taken to jail.
Come into the living room and sit down, Mom said. She had something to tell me.
Before I talked to Frankie, she said, I pulled his records. Did you know his daddy is dead and they don't know where his mama is? His aunt is raising those boys alone. I talked to the other teachers and they said his mama used to beat Frankie and his brothers. They simply haven't known much love and they don't have spending money like you do. All they know is that they have to fight for everything they get. I really feel sorry for them.
Okay, hold on a second. So there's something that I want to point out here. We all understand exactly what's happening in this story. My ESL students would have completely missed what happened in Mama Called the Sheriff paragraph. And it has to do with the amount of work it takes them to read, right? They deciphered the hieroglyphics we call English on the page, and they extracted the meaning from that, and they're delighted that they got, oh, jail, I know the word, I know jail, right? And it's interesting because some of our students here are closer to that than we think, right? The people who struggle really hard with reading, this is really interesting, and you'll find it, and you've probably found this already, but the paragraph that they read, they didn't understand a word of it, right? The struggling reader, right? So that's difficult. You're trying to train them beyond that, and I would point this out to my ESL students. the Frankies that Mom did it say they caught? Anyway, just discuss a little bit. I don't know. You're trying to get them so they can read a lot more ironic things than this deep little nuanced things in a story and understand them. But you also, you're trying to give them tools to get a method from the madness. And sometimes it feels like you're explaining a joke, and you are, and it takes the magic away sometimes. But you're also trying to help them recognize what is irony, what is true. I don't know. You're just going to have to follow that yourself. And they'll get it wrong. Anyway, whatever, that's worth it. Go ahead.
This wasn't exactly what I had expected.
Do you know what I did? Mama asked. I had the feeling that whatever it was she had done, it hadn't involved a shirt.
I had Frankie come down to my room during recess and ask if he would help me put up the blocks and crayons from the morning. I told him if he did, I'd give him a quarter, and he and his brother could spend it however they wanted. He was as nice and cooperative as could be, so I told him if he would come back and help me tomorrow, I'd take him and his brother and you to the park Saturday.
Obviously, the ditch incident of the previous day had damaged my hearing. Me going to the park with Garfields? Me alone with him in the tree-shadowed park?
I'm not going,
Yes, you are. The Bible tells us, love your enemies.
The Bible also says, thou shalt not kill.
Okay, just need some love and attention, Mama replied.
Saturday morning, we drove to where the Garfield brothers lived. A woman appeared on the front porch in a tattered housecoat. Mama got out of the car. I stayed put. I heard the Garfield and Pearl say to Mama, I sure do appreciate you doing this for the boys. I ain't got no car to take him nowhere.
Mama said, Frankie worked hard for me last week at school, and I know David is going to help me too.
Frankie and David got into the back seat. They were wearing old clothes, but clean and fairly wrinkle-free. Both had their hair combed. I had never seen a Garfield look anything like that before.
As we drove away, Mama said, son, Frankie's got something he wants to say to you. I sensed a certain embarrassment on his part, almost a shyness. Was this the same Frankie Garfield? He wanted something I couldn't understand.
Speak up, Mama said to him.
Still unable to meet my eyes, he said, I'm sorry I threw you and your bicycle on the ditch.
I can't believe what I was doing. Aren't you glad you
called on each other?
And what else, Frankie? Mama asked.
I promise not to hurt anybody at school again, he said.
What do you say? She asked me. I was too stunned to say anything.
Mama finally said, tell Frankie you appreciate his apology.
I appreciate your apology, I said to the front window. We rode to town in silence.
When Mama pulled into the park, my eyes said to her, please don't make me get out of this car.
Go ahead, she said. Everything will be okay.
When Mama picked us up, Frankie and David had begun to recount their adventures in the park.
After we pulled into their driveway, Frankie came to Mama's side of the car and said, Mrs. Christine, do you need me to help you Monday?
I'll see you at school and let you know, she said. Now, go tell your Aunt Pearl about the park.
Mom smiled as we drove away.
The Garfields never bothered anybody very much after that. And the three of us went back to the park a few more times. We never became close friends or anything like that. But Mama's kindness for them had obviously had a profound effect.
They were always at her beck and call. They cleaned her blackboard, took the erasers out and dusted them. They watered the plants and found a special pleasure in feeding the fish Mama had protected from all the way.
Mama had the thing that some teachers develop, the idea that the students were her children too.
She taught me a lot, my Mama.
I like that. Did you get your answer for the teacher? Did you?
Yeah.
We learned the name of Mama. Yeah. So here's a little something. We're not going to have time to do these questions, though they're delightful. And glance over them. If you haven't had experience with this book, you can kind of glance over them and see the kind of thinking that they do. Here's a little trick for remembering the things that you read. I know of a teacher, a very talented teacher, one of my friends that I really admire. He takes notes every Sunday in his book, and he doesn't write any words, no words on the page. He draws, as the preacher's preaching, he draws pictures of the things that he thinks and the things that the preacher says. And it's beautiful, and it's interesting because you look at the notes and you know exactly, if you would listen, I mean, you about need to listen to the message too, but you know what he said. Like, it's amazing how much detail is in a picture. When you're reading a story, how much you remember from the story is directly related to how well you pictured it as it happened. Reading the story through really well, picturing each scene. That's why drawing can be a really neat part of a literature class. If you can do the ESL, it's a tremendous part of ESL. Because you're trying to get them to picture the scenes clearly. You know, if the narrator of this story, if he would go and do the lessons, the questions for this story, he would know all the answers, right? Because he lived it, right? And we, if we live the story well enough, if when we read it, if we picture it, we pause, we think, then the questions will be much, 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 much easier because we got the spirit of the story. You took time. You enjoyed it. And that time is your best spent time. And if you tell your children that and you somehow communicate that with them so that when they get to the story, they enjoy it. When they get to their doing their lesson, the questions are just a matter of doing. I actually like to read ahead in these books, and I read them to my students earlier in the year when I have the opportunity to do that. Different grades, maybe we're not going to get to both books in it, you know. Well, I'll read some other stories and familiarize with them. That, all that stuff. Most of the stories in these books are about these particular books and all your books are about some powerful change that happens in a character's life. Because these are the best kinds of stories, they will give your children an opportunity to be changed as well. I can hardly overstate that. You can live with Jean Valjean as he meets the bishop and his life is changed forever. Our great job as teachers is to prepare children for this world, but most of all to prepare them for eternity. And I think that this teaching of reading, to read well, to understand what they read, and to love great literature, this may be your greatest opportunity. These stories are all helping us to pursue the truth, God's truth, the greatest truth. The truth that will set you free. God bless you as you go and teach your literature, your reading classes, and make a difference forever with your students.